Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's Monday, the 11th of December. Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Abubakar Jallo. Thanks for joining us live on air and on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up to 6,000 IS jihadists could return to Africa, the African Union warns.
Obviously, the most prominent danger is the fact that you could have potentially 6,000 battle-hardened Islamist extremists returning to an African continent where Islamist extremism appears to be burgeoning.
And an attack in northern Ghana leaves at least 4 people dead. A small group in the area that once a district capital has become the suspect.
The independence that I mean is that we are scattered around. So we now want our district and anything that they are doing, we are not part of.
Plus, rising anger in the Muslim world following Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. There's more coming up right after we hear other stories making headlines across the world. Stay tuned.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Authorities in New York just held a press conference on Monday after an explosion went off at New York's Port Authority building. One suspect has been taken into custody. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio said that authorities knew of no more credible or specific threats to the city.
This was an attempted terrorist attack. Thank God the perpetrator did not achieve his ultimate goals. Thank God our first responders were there so quickly to address the situation to make sure people were safe.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu traveled to Europe on Monday, where the Israeli premier urged EU members to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, after U.S. President Donald Trump announced last week the controversial Jerusalem decision. Speaking in Brussels, Netanyahu said recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital makes peace possible in the region.
I believe that all or most of the European countries will move their embassies to Jerusalem, recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and engage robustly with us for security, prosperity, and peace.
In Germany, Chancellor Angela Merkel has condemned the burning of Israeli flags and symbols after hundreds of protesters over the weekend demonstrated against U.S. President Trump's Jerusalem decision. Merkel told reporters that Germany would reject any form of anti-Semitism.
We condemn all kinds of anti-Semitism and xenophobia, and no disagreements, not even over the status of Jerusalem, justify such actions. The government must fight all such incidents with full force.
In Syria, Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered its defense ministry to partially withdraw Russian soldiers from the war-torn country, saying that Russia has routed the Islamic State militant group from the Middle Eastern country. Putin said Moscow would continue to maintain a military presence and would strike down terrorists if they begin their militant offenses. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The African Union warned on Monday that thousands of jihadists fighting for the Islamic State militant group in Iraq and Syria could soon return home to Africa. The AU's Commissioner for Peace and Security said African countries should prepare for any threat from the returning jihadists by sharing intelligence information and by working together. Shmael Chergi warned that up to 6,000 African militants could return home. Alleged jihadists in Mali have killed at least 6 people in an attack on an armed Tuareg group near the city of Timbuktu. A security source told reporters that the attackers may have wanted to sabotage a 2012 peace deal between rebels and the Tuareg-led separatist group. And now in sports, the Champions League draw was made on Monday, with Premier League leaders Manchester City taking on Switzerland's Basel, Manchester United facing La Liga side Sevilla, and Liverpool playing against Portugal's Porto. Two-time defending Champions League winner Real Madrid will take on Neymar's Paris Saint-Germain. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link. Thank you for joining us. I am Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Remember, we are live on Facebook, so don't forget to leave a comment on the stories we are covering.
Now, the African Union has said up to 6,000 Africans who fought for the so-called Islamic State or IS jihadist group in Iraq and Syria could return home. The AU's top security official warned African countries to prepare for the threat, saying that the returning jihadists pose a serious threat to the security and stability of the continent. Ismail Shargi, the AU's Commissioner for Peace and Security, said the matter requires specific treatment and intense cooperation between African countries. So what specific threat do these returning fighters pose? A question I put to Ryan Cummins, the director of the Africa-focused risk consultancy Risk Signal Risk.
I think obviously the most prominent danger is the fact that you could have potentially 6,000 battle-hardened Islamist extremists who've spent significant time fighting in the Levant for the Islamic State, returning to an African continent where Islamist extremism appears to be burgeoning.
Do you think some of these fighters have returned, or do you think they will be returning in the near future?
Well, I think that, the return might have been an ongoing basis to these countries, but I think that where we must be, I guess, slightly cautious in terms of assessing their impact is kind of this, assessment that many of them would necessarily be returning to kind of continue militancy within their respective countries. I mean, this is by no means, trying to dilute the threat. It's just that, they are potentially could be quite a large number of those who were disillusioned by the conflict that they were exposed to in the Levant and might not necessarily to continue insurgent activities within their home countries. There could be others who are obviously motivated to kind of assimilate themselves within the existing militant groups that are operating on the African continent, and that there might just be others that are indifferent to the continuation of waging any form of warfare.
Now, we know that most of these foreign fighters are from North African countries, but a number of sub-Saharan African countries were also included, including areas where the Boko Haram in West Africa was very active, and also in East Africa, the Al-Shabaab area.
Yes.
Do you basically have any specific information? What country would be really badly affected by the return of these foreign fighters?
Well, if the premise is that returning foreign fighters are going to be a significant threat within the countries to which they returned, I think we saw quite a number of Nigerian nationals traveling to places such as Libya and then also to the Levant to obviously assist the Islamic State in that role. Interestingly enough, there was quite a large number of Senegalese that were perceived as being transited to foreign conflict theatres again, for the purposes of joining Islamist extremist groups. I think across the border in East Africa, we saw some Kenyan nationals that travel to the Levant as well. Even down here in South Africa, there was documented cases. I think the Iraqi ambassador at the time mentioned that potentially in excess of 100 individuals, South African nationals, I should say, had traveled to Syria to join Islamist extremist movements there.
Ryan Cummins, the director of the Africa Focus Risk Consultancy, Signal Risk. And I have a couple of responses here. Lamin Fofanagbola says, "My country, Sierra Leone, has no room for extremists. We know what the rebels did in the 11-year civil war."
And Boaki from Ghana says, "African countries are not prepared for any eventuality. Europe is struggling with these threats and they have prioritized security."
Phillips Bassi says, "I wouldn't be surprised if the government of my country doesn't even know about this."
And now let's move on to another story here. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has condemned the banning of Israeli flags and the use of anti-Semitic slogans during a demonstration in Berlin. This comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was visiting Brussels, the seat of the European Union. Netanyahu is hoping to convince EU countries to follow the US in recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's undivided capital. But EU Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini had other plans.
"We believe that the only realistic solution to the conflict between Israel and Palestine is based on two states, with Jerusalem as the capital of both the State of Israel and the State of Palestine along the 67 line. This is our consolidated position."
From Ramallah in the Palestinian territories, Mark Frings, head of the Konrad Adenauer Foundation, which is linked to Chancellor Angela Merkel's CDU party, told DW's Amrita Chima that Trump's move was to be expected.
Well, on the one hand, they are not really surprised because there were no clear hope in the new U.S. administration. Trump made it very clear during the campaign already where he stands with regard to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But at the same time, we saw some demonstrations. Most of them were very peaceful, but of course, also some rockets were fired from Gaza. But the general atmosphere is rather calm because people have a very realistic understanding of the situation.
And the Israeli Prime Minister wants EU countries to move their embassies to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. Do you see Germany taking such a step?
No, this would not happen. I cannot speak on behalf of the German government, but I think all statements coming from Brussels and Berlin were very clear. The international consensus, as it was a consensus till Wednesday noon, will remain the same. Both parties, Israel and the Palestinians, have to negotiate on the final status, and Jerusalem is one of the final status issues. So I think I'm very much convinced that Germany will stick to this position.
Mark Frings from the Konrad Adenauer Foundation in Ramallah.
And now back to Africa and in Ghana, where unidentified gunmen killed 4 and injured 6 people in Ajong, a village in the northern region, on Sunday night. The reasons for the attack are yet unknown, but people suspect it was carried out by members of the Concobas ethnic group. The group had warned that they would cause trouble if the government fails to allocate them a district capital. Maxwell Souk has more.
At about 1900 hours of the 10th December 2017, that is yesterday, at Najon No. 1, a village under Bumpugu Yoyo district.
This brings to 10 the number of people killed by gunmen in the area within 1 week. Over the weekend, police impounded a car loaded with 6 pump-action guns on it. Northern Regional Police Commander DCOP Edusai Sapong condemned the act when he addressed the media today.
Upon a search conducted in the vehicle, 6 pump-action guns with 130 BB cartridges were found in the car. All the occupants were then arrested and brought to Tamale Regional Police Headquarters for investigations.
The motive for Sunday's attack is yet unknown, and the people behind it have not been apprehended, but the police have commenced investigations. The Kunkumbes, a minority group in the northern region, are the main suspect of the attack because they had warned earlier of causing trouble if the government fails to give them a district capital. Richard Dawuni, an assemblyman for the area, had this to say.
If the peace will prevail, unless they give the capital.
If peace is to prevail, they have to give the capital to the Concombas. If not that, we, the youth, the women, the chiefs, are not going to agree. We are the majority, and we are not going to agree tomorrow.
Since the government started the move to create new districts in parts of the country, various tribes and groups have been lobbying intensely to get a district capital. Liwar Bismarck said because the governments have not given them their own district, it was difficult for the Kunkumbes to organize themselves.
The independence that I mean is that we are scattered around. So we now want our district, and anything that they are doing, we are not part of.
The Kunkumbes formed about 80% of the population in numbers in the northeastern part of Ghana, which by constitutional provisions should be qualified for a separate district.
Maxwell Souk reporting from northern Ghana. And Crispin, this is a story that we've been monitoring since last week when we heard about these clashes between the ethnic groups there.
That's right. And it's quite surprising because Ghana is known for its peace and stability. So when we hear such a story where people are now taking up arms, it's quite worrying. It's quite concerning. And I think we don't need another,
conflict or unstable
Africa, unstable region in Africa or in West Africa.
Yeah, everyone is hoping for Ghana to remain peaceful and stable as it has always been.
That's exactly true. And we've just mentioned as in the other story where there's the possibility of these 6,000 jihadists also coming back, and they could also be a source of instability in Africa. So we African governments and leaders need to really step up their game to make sure that they do protect their citizens.
It's really interesting according to what Ryan said there in that interview, where he said most of the returning jihadists are from Senegal, Kenya and South Africa, countries that you really don't expect these people to come from.
That's exactly true. So anyway, thank you so much for keeping it Africa Link, and those on Facebook, do leave us a comment whenever you can and we'll read it when we do have the time. You're listening to Africa Link, live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Abubakar Jalo. We are also live on Facebook, so do join us there and drop us a line or two on the stories that we are reporting.
And still to come, saving premature born babies in Kenya.
The earlier they come out, the more complications they tend to have.
And it's Monday. It's always that time of the week when we bring you a roundup with sport from Samsi Omale.
But before all that, let's head to the DRC, where the UN peacekeeping mission, MONUSCO, says it will launch a military offensive against the militant group that killed at least 15 Tanzanian peacekeepers. Bodies of the fallen troops are expected back on Tuesday or Wednesday for burial. But even as the UN grapples with what was definitely one of the worst attacks on the Blue Helmets, the question as to which among the numerous armed militia groups in DRC could be responsible remains unanswered. As Tessa Walter reports, suspicion is falling on Uganda's ADF rebels.
The ADF emerged in the 1990s under the leadership of Jamal Mukulu, a former Ugandan Protestant who converted to Islam with the aim to create an Islamic state in the region. The majority of its 1,500 members are also Muslims, who were supported by the Ugandan government for a long time, says Professor Phil Clark from SOAS University in London. But things are changing.
In the past, they've been backed by the Ugandan government, but in the last few years, the links between the ADF and Uganda have been quite weak. So I think, firstly, the ADF are capitalising on this general situation of instability in Congo, particularly given the delays to the elections and the uncertainty around whether President Kabila will step down. But the bigger question is how have they suddenly gotten their hands on the kind of military equipment that they would have needed to mount this kind of attack that we've seen in the last couple of days? And are they being backed by another government in the region? Are they being supported by some other power further afield? It's simply not clear at the moment what's going on here.
What is clear is that their political ambitions are far larger than the ones of other rebel groups. This includes the goal to push the UN completely out of DRC. To bring more attention to the group, a few African leaders are now trying to convince the international community to declare the ADF a terrorist organization. But the UN Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, Jean-Pierre Lacroix, is skeptical.
I think you could characterize ADF as a group that has an agenda that is both ideological and extremist in nature, but also very much focused, as many other armed groups in that region, on the exploitation of illegal resources.
The exploitation of illegal resources, as well as the violence against civilians by rebel groups, has been going on for many years, and this despite the presence of UN peacekeepers, known as MONUSCO, in DRC since 1999. The latest attack on the UN camp is only another proof of their ineffectiveness, says Professor Clark. And now, the US is planning to cut funding for peacekeeping missions worldwide, including the one in DRC.
What any reduction in funding is likely to mean is even reduced capacity for an already very weak peacekeeping force on the ground. And this also happened at a time of increasing instability and increasing violence in Congo. So the possibility that we may see reduced UN peacekeeping capacity sends all of the wrong messages to local people and really raises the fears and the concerns of everyday Congolese.
And that report was compiled by DW's Tessa Walter.
And on our Facebook page, DW Africa, we've been asking, how can such attacks on the UN peacekeepers be avoided in the future?
Ismail Ibrahim says the UN peacekeeping forces should be allowed to fight with rebels at any time because rebels are evil.
And Wesley Twisley says the UN is a failed organization. When citizens cry from the suffering people, from their government, the UN stays silent.
That's right. And he continues to say, when they rise in anger to defend themselves, the UN sees them as terrorists and sends its forces. Keep those comments coming and we'll read them whenever we can.
Health check.
Pregnancy and childbirth have long been described as miracles. But for some, the miracle ends too soon. The rise in premature born babies is not only a concern in Kenya, but a global one. with Kenya being ranked among the top 15 countries with the highest number of premature deliveries globally. DW's Rhoda Odhiambo reports how the lack of enough incubators in the country is putting the survival rates of babies who are born too soon at a greater risk.
Every mother dreams of carrying a pregnancy to its full term and giving birth to a healthy baby. But not everyone is lucky to experience the bundle of joy at its best. 32-year-old Sarah Wangare delivered her babies when she was just 7 months pregnant. Her babies were so tiny that they had to be put in an incubator for 2 months until they had gained the right amount of weight. She left them at the hospital and had to return each day to see and feed them under strict visiting hours.
In the beginning, they were being given fluids through drips. I used to pump my milk and feed them through the pipes because they could not breastfeed. I was told that my babies had to wait until they were at least 1.6 kilograms so that I can be able to hold and feed them.
But who are preterm babies? Preemies, as they are popularly known, refer to babies who are born before 37 weeks. Data from the Health Ministry shows that 188,900 babies are born too soon in Kenya every year. Out of this, 8,303 die annually, which translates to 26 deaths every day. Nurse Ogongo from the Newborn Care Unit at the Kenyatta National Hospital says premature deliveries are closely linked to unhealthy lifestyles. Mothers who've been diagnosed with anemia, diabetes, or high blood pressure, or acquire an infection while carrying the pregnancy to term.
There are those who will come a lot earlier than was expected, by maybe up to 10 weeks. The babies will probably be born at 30 weeks or even less. The earlier they come out, the more complications they tend to have.
Such infants need to be incubated until they're stable. The mother can only touch them with their hands since they're so tiny and very delicate. Once they attain 2 kilograms, mothers are allowed to have their babies back but care for them through what is known as the kangaroo mother care. This involves infants being carried, usually by the mother, with skin-to-skin contact. Nurse Ogongo explains.
Basically, the concept is to regulate the baby's body temperature. If I give the best medications which we have here, very strong ones, but baby is cold. If I feed baby, but baby is cold, so this baby must be kept warm at all costs.
Kenyatta Hospital, which is the largest referral health center in East Africa, records more than 500 deliveries every month. 50% of them are babies born too soon. Majority of them are referred to Kenyatta from county or local clinics which don't have incubators. Kenyatta has only 10 incubators to be shared among all babies, and this puts them at an even greater risk of getting infections.
DW correspondent Rhoda Odhiambo with that report. And Abu, I could not just, you know, feel like happy when I heard the sounds of the babies, even though I know that they might be in pain as premature babies. But it was so moving, you know, to hear those sounds of those little ones.
It really touched me really hard. I can't imagine how those mothers might be feeling with you know, you'll be expecting for so long to have a baby and it's there and then suddenly you cannot hold the baby in your arms.
That's true. But it needs patience, and again, it needs the government in Kenya again to make sure that they provide enough incubators so that more and more premature babies can survive and be united with their mothers.
Yeah, if they are taken care of, that would definitely happen. Anyways, quick shout out to a few of you guys who are listening to us live on our page, on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We have Peculiar Caleb, who's basically writing from Dubai, the UAE. Thank you for that, Caleb. And we also have Ged Georgi. Thanks for that. And Alex Alex Johnson, of course, says good job, DW Africa, for the good work you guys are doing. Thanks as well, Alex.
Yeah, and we have Samuel Hattie saying he's listening from Oslo. Enosh Sharif, I enjoy your news and programs. Keep it up. So lots of people commenting and giving us a thumbs up for Africa Link. And we do appreciate all those comments, of course.
We're definitely happy to be doing that. Anyways, turning to sports now. The draws for the UEFA Champions League round of 16 is out, and the CECAFA Senior Champions Challenge Cup is getting underway as well. And for more sports news roundup, we turn to Samson Omale.
We begin here in Africa, where one of the oldest football competition, the annual CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup, is getting into the crucial stages as host Harambee Stars of Kenya will meet Tanzania in one of the must-win matches today. In one of the matches played on Sunday, Uganda cruised into the semis of the CECAFA tournament despite a 1-1 draw against Ethiopia. Benjamin Orchard, Ugandan Cranes goalkeeper, says Ethiopia gave them a run for their money.
We give them credit for not cracking down, but it was a wake-up call for us. We are the team to beat in the CECAFA tournament, and we know that there is a lot expected from us, a lot at stake. Ugandans expect us to win the CECAFA.
The draws for the UEFA Champions League round of 16 took place on Monday, with five-time winners and current Bundesliga table tappers Bayern Munich drawn against Turkish giants Besiktas, while last year's beaten finalist Juventus will take on Tottenham. Defending champions Real Madrid will face French big hitters Paris Saint-Germain, while Chelsea suffered harsh punishment for finishing second in their group as they were drawn against Barcelona. English Premier League leaders Manchester City will play Barcelona, who have had some fine results against English sides in recent years. Unfancied Ukrainian club Shakhtar Donetsk will play Roma. With a record 5 English clubs in the draw, three-time champions Manchester United will face Sevilla, and Liverpool, five-time winners, will be up against two-time former champions Porto. Marcus Rashford of Manchester United and Felipe Coutinho of Liverpool reacts to the draw this way.
But we're not scared to play any team, and you know, I think teams know the quality that we have and the threat that we possess, and we also know the threat that they have, and that's what it is. We have to deal with what we get, what gets put in front of us.
Every team who plays in Champions League are big, so for sure the draw will be a difficult game, but we have to prepare ourselves to be ready to play.
The UEFA Champions League first legs will be played on February 13th, 14th and 20th and 21st, with second legs on March 6th, 7th and 13th and 14th.
Samson Omale with that roundup there of sports.
Right, Abu, and the big game for me at least is Real Madrid versus PSG in the round of 16. What's your favorite team?
My team there, Bayern Munich. We have it very easy in this draw.
Lucky for you. Well, but I'm a Madrid fan, and I'm sort of a bit
worried there, because you know, whenever you are in that sort of category with no strong teams, and then you tend to be, you know, not really care. It's like, oh, it's going to be easy.
That's how you lose.
You end up having big surprises.
That's true. Anyway, I'll be crossing my fingers for Ronaldo and his team to beat Neymar's PSG so that we can again make history.
Be careful with that, Christian.
All right, let's go back to the top, to the story that we had about Tanzania and the fallen soldiers that were taking part in this peacekeeping force.
And we have a comment here from Ndeso. Says, I am sorry for the Tanzanian lives that were lost. With that, I said, I don't care one bit for the UN. Personally, every single African country should withdraw from the UN.
And another very strong comment from Ramathan Mugenye, who says, just like the ICC, the UN is a bunch of useless people only committed to fulfill opportunistic interests of Europe and the US. Thank you so much for those comments. And we'll be here tomorrow again. From me, Crispin Mwakideo.
And from me, Abubakar Jalo.
It's goodbye. We'll be right back.